Hi, this is Adam, and
I am Dan.
So we've been talking about this for a while, and we've been having thoughts about maybe doing something like a podcast. And we know there's a couple of BattleTech podcasts out there, and we make no pretensions to doing this better than anybody else. But we've been in this game for decades now, and so we thought, hey, we have something to say. We have annoying opinions that we want to make you guys listen to. And so here we are with episode number one, and a couple of things we wanted to talk about today. So, Dan, do you want to introduce yourself, what you do, why you love the game, all that jazz?
Yes. My name is Dan, last name Pharaoh. I'm going to be as formal as possible I can with this. I'm a locksmith for a living, and I got into BattleTech a really long time ago. It was from MechWarrior 2. And I spent a lot of time in it, all the way through that. Ghost Bear's Legacy, Mercenaries, so...
Also, we're recording outside, so you may hear various noises.
Yeah, like the airplane. I actually also got into BattleTech from 4th edition. I didn't get 3rd edition like all the cool people. So... I like the paper standees. And I have bad taste in mechs. I like the assassin the most.
My name is Adam. I'm actually a veterinarian. And, you know, like Dan, got into BattleTech a long time ago. So, you know, for me, you know, BattleTech was actually the cartoon. So I was there. I was there to watch the cartoon live, which was great. And then... that would put me in about 4th grade, and from there, it was quickly discovered that BattleTech was not just a cartoon, but was actually a board game. And so one of the guys in the neighborhood got a copy of City Tech, and then I got BattleTech 3rd edition. And so this was kind of just right before all of the noise with the Harmony Gold stuff and the lawsuit to get rid of what became the Unseen. And so for me... not only was BattleTech 3rd Edition my jumping in point, but there's actually a guy in the neighborhood, a friend of mine, his uncle, who was maybe about 20 years older than us, and he also had a whole cache of classic source books. And so for me, for a long time, BattleTech was the Succession Wars, the Star League, the Unseen. I mean, you open up those old books, like every image is of the Unseen. Crusaders, Warhammers, Marauders, they're all like that. And so, that was the era that I was in. And something about BattleTech just sort of crawled into your brain. It split your head open, it crawled into your brain, and it didn't leave. Something about that whole universe, the whole setting, and it just stuck. And I think as I got older, rather than growing out of it, probably like you too, Dan, you just sort of begin to appreciate the nuances of the universe.
As you get older, you kind of have a better way of understanding things.
Yeah.
Instead of like, ooh, look at the pretty art.
Right. And so it's not just, big stompy robots. It's also the setting. And a lot of, shades of gray, like no one's perfect. And in fact, for me, for a long time, I was aware of the Federated Commonwealth, but, I didn't know about the Fourth Succession War because of the gap in the books that I had. And, for a long time, the Federated Sons were considered the White Hats. And I get it. It's there in the novels, but, not so much in the source books. And, for whatever reason, the Fed Sons was something I glommed onto. And that was, like, without knowing about the novels and Hans Davian and Justin Allard and, all those guys.
Yeah, obviously, I got in the Mercenaries.
Yeah.
MechWarrior 2 would do that, too. Especially because of Deadeye.
Yeah. Kill the meat, save the metal. Life is cheap. Battle mechs aren't. It's good times.
If you get killed, try to scream a lot.
So we've been in the game for a long time. And actually, Dan and I met a couple of years ago, just by happenstance over the boards, the official BattleTech forum, and said, hey, anyone else in this area wanting to play?
Yeah, it was more like, you lived here this whole time?
Right. Because I don't know if you guys noticed, you guys out there in podcast land, who are unfortunate enough to listen to this, but, by the time we got into BattleTech, I mean, it had quickly, it wasn't what it was. You know, when I got into it, you know, BattleTech was, you know, probably third string in terms of popularity. I mean, way, way in front of that was were the Warhammer games by Games Workshop.
Yeah, and almost every friend I had played Warhammer.
Yeah.
And it was really tough to get people
to try.
Yeah, like to play anything unless it was like something along the lines of what was going on in MechWarrior 2 or 3. So it's like you had to have clan tech, you had to have custom mechs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's you know, it's one of those things, and I hope that, you know, BattleTech's going to have a resurgence. I hope it's going to go well. We've been talking about the year of BattleTech now for a couple of years, but I think
this is it.
This is it. Well, I hope so.
It has to be it.
It has to be it. otherwise, it will continue. It won't go away, but it will continue to limp along like it has. But I think Catalyst Games has it in the right spot. But yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I didn't play a lot of other games because, you know, I was so heavily invested into BattleTech. It was like, oh God, I don't spend any more money on anything else. This shit's expensive.
Yeah, as we just drop like what, $500 on the the Kickstarter.
So I'm gonna buy $300 in used minis. Yeah, disposable income. Oh man, still, not the best decisions.
We still think the full Ameris should have been an option.
Yes, the full Ameris, $10,000 full Ameris, override everybody and ruin everything.
You get a bedazzled Nerf gun.
Yeah, where's my option for a Star of Gargoyles?
Oh my god. Maybe we'll talk about that game in a different topic one of these days.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah, the Gargoyle's actually not a bad mech. I know you guys don't believe me out there, but we've done it. It can, the Gargoyle Prime can give an entire Inner Sphere Lance a really bad day. And we will talk about cluster hits and why they're not terrible and why you guys need to get over rolling dice.
And this is why no one's going to listen to us.
Yeah, this is it. This is it. Done. Done. Unsubscribe. but yeah, so yeah, obviously we're recording this on a cell phone, so I hope this audio quality is going to turn out okay. But
we'll get something better. We're just kind of playing around right now.
Yeah, this has been something we've just been talking about for a long time. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we've been out there for a while. We played the game for a long time. And it's funny, there have been a number of topics on the boards that, you know, we wanted to kind of, you know, talk about and follow through with and give our opinion. And also give our opinion in a way that's not going to be lost in the shuffle. I mean, sometimes it feels like, you know, someone writes something and then it's just two people responding to each other back and forth. And then, you know, maybe three or four other people kind of get ignored. Which, I mean, it happens. We've all been there on fora, but this is it. You're listening. You have to listen to us. You have to put up with us.
Yeah, there goes my air conditioner in the background, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, for us, I mean, well, you know, for me, I love the ongoing meta plot of the game. Well, I wouldn't say love it. I mean, there are definitely decisions that I wouldn't have made, but, you know, I get it. Like, what I would make is a different form of bias, and that can be problematic. So I can think one way it's going to be okay, but there may be a bias inherent in there.
Well, as a whole, too, to be a BattleTech fan, you kind of have to be into, like, math and statistics, and you like tinkering with things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably why I'm a locksmith. I never thought I would do this.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, I think, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, I like the ongoing story. I want the story to finish where it's at. I want to see the new jumping off point. I want to see what happens. But, you know, despite wanting to see the story progress and wanting to read more novels and seeing what's going on with the story, I cannot help but, you know, still the game I love to play is actually that early game, the 3025 era, because I feel the game is the most balanced and it forces probably the most decisions on you. I know there are definitely some people who will disagree with that, which is fine. But I think for me, I find the game the most enjoyable when it's that 3025 era. And possibly, you know, Clan Invasion. And there's a reason why we're mentioning this, because it's going to kind of get into a topic that I think is an ongoing sore point in the community. And I know the writers out there recognize this, and the guys, the developers, the powers that be. And I just sort of wonder if anything can change about that. And I'd be really curious to see what maybe you, our loyal listeners for half an episode, would think about this. Which kind of gets to autocannons.
Uh-oh.
How to fix autocannons.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think, you know, looking back at the history of Battletech, there's a lot of interesting points about it. You know, originally, I think up through second edition, you know,
heat sinks were not mounted in the engine, and I just learned that because of the topic.
Which kind of blows your mind, right?
I had no idea.
So, yeah, I mean, you can hide as many heat sinks in the engine as the engine's rating divided by 25. And so in some instances, in small engines, they may come with 10 heat sinks, but especially in lighter mechs, some of those heat sinks may be mounted outside the engine, which may be a reference to, you know, a smaller engine size just cannot have the heat sink capacity in the engine, but it comes with those heat sinks. Mm-hmm. But it used to be like the, you know, a 300 rated engine, you could pay, you know, 2 tons, you would get 12 heat sinks total, and all those heat sinks would be in the engine. But back in the day, you know, a Marauder, which had 16 heat sinks,
all of them were on that sheet.
Yeah, all of them were on the sheet.
At least from what I understand. I've never seen it, but yeah, I mean, if you even think about it, like, because the original Marauder had the autocannon, right?
Right, and way back when, it was the autocannon.
Yeah.
It was just an AC-5.
And those heat sinks were your padding for the ammo, too.
Yeah, and I don't think there were more heat sinks until, or sorry, more autocannons until City Tech, which introduced the Hunchback.
Yes, it did. Yeah, I think it did. And I have to go look at my box set again.
Yeah, and so that's when you get those different sizes, the 2, 5, 10, and 20. And I think, you know, there are a couple of problems with this. And it's one thing to say that, you know, autocannons are considered an older tech base versus, say, the PPC and the lasers. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they need to be as good or as great or as awesome as lasers.
No.
But I think they need to be viable. And in that introductory tech, that 3025 era, you can get by with them, no problem. But, and especially once you get past those 10 heat sinks that come with the engine, you're starting to pay more to use laser weapons.
Well,
but
there's a reason people pick the Grand Dragon over the regular Dragon.
Right. Yeah. Right. And there's a reason why, you know, sometimes the first thing that people do when they learn how to customize mechs is they do stupid things like me, when you forget that you got to pay for gyros and stuff like that, and you make a mech that's got 2 autocannon 20s and 2 LRM 20s, or you make a zombie laser boat, which is just, it's just the thing you do, because you quickly learn, like, either my mech can explode from missiles or you know, ammunition explosions, or it can't.
Or I could pad on a bunch of lasers and heat sinks and drag the game on for 30 turns.
Yeah. So, I think in that level 1 era, those autocannons are not bad, and they have their uses. You know, and even the autocannon 2, in sort of more of a meta game or a role-playing game or a continuing campaign game, instances where your mech can have effects that are not directly played out in the battlefield. You know, like, for example, through like an RPG setting. So an example I read on the board, which was great, was you're in a Vulcan and you're chasing down a Wasp, and that Wasp is about the same speed as you. So you can make a couple rolls, you got your target numbers, you're able to keep on them, and you're able to sort of like keep them at a distance and, you know, wreck a leg. And maybe you use, you know, half a ton of AC-2 ammo. And you don't need to necessarily play that whole battle out on a map sheet with record sheets. You can just sort of role play it, which is interesting. Or you can attack installations from a range that nobody else can hit you at. Or if you even wanted to play with extreme range options, you can get an AC-2 and fire at an immobile target, and it's not a big, you know, target modifier because it's an immobile target, even though it's at extreme range, and you can really just bust that place up. But on the battlefield, on a single setting game, there are problems.
Yeah, in a stand-up game, you're never going to have that whole immobile target scenario with like a building or objective like that. Because I would argue that most of the people who play Battletech are probably people who just do mech versus mech battles. Just your regular stand-up battle.
Yeah.
Which is safe to say, when we have this conversation about making any kind of improvement to autocannons, you know, that's pretty much what we're trying to keep in mind.
Yeah, it kind of has to be in that Lance v. Lance setting.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there are definitely parts where... Like, so, okay, so for sure, right, you could take a Clint, which is a fast, medium mech, and you could remove that autocannon...
Put a PPC
And put a PPC in there. But, at the same time, what an autocannon lets you to do, despite having more weight and less damage, is that you can spend every turn, every goddamn turn, jumping...
And firing that damn autocannon.
And not make any heat.
But you can argue for the PPC, if you take in consideration how the Clint's armor layout is.
Right.
Which seems to match a lot of the lighter mechs in that era, too.
Yeah.
That PPC has better penetrating power, which, oh, on top of that, too, no ammo.
Yeah.
So you have to worry about that, which is why that weapon would be more appealing than that autocannon.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like when you consider the trade-offs between the two, you're going for the PPC. You will deal with the heat, you will deal with, you know, any modifiers. So, well, they have the same range bracket, so you don't even have to deal with
it. You will find a way to put up with it. And, you know, granted, yes, I mean, there are a couple things that to keep in mind, right, is that, you know, an autocannon may be an easier weapon to maintain. If you play more of a metagame or a campaign, it's easier to maintain, it's easier to replace, you know, it's easier to find because it requires less technology to build.
Now, is that necessarily because of cost? Because I saw someone say that they actually cost more than weapons.
Yeah. They're,
but it's probably more based on availability.
Based on availability.
Yeah.
Because actually the cost is not significantly cheaper, and the ammunition is not significantly cheaper.
But you can get it.
But you can get it. And that's not... I don't think that's enough of a reason. And I don't think... While the metagame is interesting, I think it's really important, especially if you're able to find a group to do an RPG setting with and play a campaign with. You know, autocannons are probably easier to repair. You know, it's not a series of capacitors and it's, you know, the autocannon has moving parts. You can probably do it in a machine lathe and you can just do it.
Well, I mean, they still have internal combustion engines around, so.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, not so much for vehicles, but on Max. Like,
maybe that's another topic. But
yeah,
future
come
in the
on,
80s.
Whiz kids. Oh, jeez. Well, okay. Oh, we don't want to be here forever. but yeah, I think, you know, part of the thing is, and I just sort of wonder, is this something that the developers would be willing to just seriously take a look at? Because the autocannons do not have to be, you know, the autocannon 5 does not have to be good as a PPC. And I think the comparison there is a little weak just because they have the same range bracket. I think what would be more interesting is to draw the comparison between the autocannon 10 and the PPC and the autocannon 5 and the large laser. But, okay, so what about tonnages, right? Adam, what about tonnages? What the fuck, man?
What are you thinking?
I think you
put the large laser on and enough heat sink.
Yeah. I think the problem is you can't get around the fact that autocannons need more hitting power. Now, maybe you don't need to up the autocannon 20, but it wouldn't hurt. I mean, an autocannon 20 can do a lot of damage, and it's probably fine at sure, you can get 4 medium lasers and it'll do 20 points, but it won't do 20 points at the same location unless you're really lucky. That's where the autocannons come in. But I think, well, there are a couple of ways to get around it, but I think you just cannot help it, but you've got to find a way to do a damage boost. And the way I see it is, I know Battletech's got Legacy, and I know it's one of those games that you can pick up at any point, and you're fine, and you can follow along with the rules, and there have been minor tweaks, but I don't think it's that big of a deal to change the damage profile. And I don't think it's going to upset battle value that much, and I don't think it's going to upset the tabletop too much, but it's going to make your Wolverines, your Shadowhawks, your Clints, they're going to make them better. It's going to make, even in later eras, it's going to make the Daimyo better. It's going to make the Gargoyle better. It's going to make, you know, the Kit Fox better. And I don't think it's going to wildly unbalance the game, and we've been talking a lot about ways to do this.
We've been actually playing this a lot, too. But what it comes down to is we have basically two ways that we think about this. It's either we suck it up and just change the stats, change the damage on it altogether,
mm-hmm.
or we add some kind of quirk to the weapon to make it feel different than the other weapons that are already out there.
Right. And then, I think that second one has a lot of appeal. It's really cool, and it's definitely worth considering, and it's one we haven't play tested yet. It's worth doing. My one concern, and it's really not a big concern, it's something that we can get by with, but it's, would that complicate the rules in a way that makes it unnecessary? But it's really minimal. Yeah, you just deal with it.
To be clear, the second one is an idea that I just kind of thought up. It was based off of our playtesting with your idea just to increase damage.
Yeah,
which we did like.
And it's not like a massive increase. And it's not even as much as, say, what they did with the BattleTech PC game. But it's like, you know, you add 2 points basically to all the weapons. And it follows a sort of decreasing, sort of like the way lasers do. You know, the small does 3, medium does 5, large does 8. Mm-hmm. So the Autocannon 2 does 4, the AC5 does 7, the 10 does 12, which actually makes it a head capper, and then the 20 does 22. And what happens when you make the AC5 do 7 points of damage, it's able to compete with a large laser in a way that it really wouldn't before. And it's so heat neutral, almost, that it's really interesting that you can do that. And the AC2 doing 4 points of damage is nice because it makes it a viable alternative to, like, an LRM-5. Now, there's massive weight differences between the two weapons, and there's, you know, massive, you know, damage differences the way they are in the standard BattleTech, and, you know, it's like, why take an AC-2? I just take a Blackjack and put on, you know, 2 LRM-5s in both arms or something.
Yeah. The other good example, too, would be if you look at an underwhelming mech, which, I mean, I kind of like it just because of its looks, but like the Vulcan.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, that Autocannon 2 does a lot more damage, which obviously makes the mech a lot more viable. And it also shows you, you know, a good way to use the Autocannon.
Right.
Which is probably something they were thinking of when they came up with the design in the first place.
Yeah.
But it's just, in a 4v4 game, it's not enough.
Well, and it
just is not enough.
And by no means does that mean that these weapons are going to replace, you know, if you took an awesome with the buffed AC damage and you remove the 3 PPCs and put 4 autocannon 5s, the 3 PPC version is probably going to be better, but the 4 AC 5s is interesting, and it would be interesting to see that in like a periphery Blackwater or something like that.
Yeah, or you can't refill, or not refill, but you cannot replace those PPCs that got shot out.
Yeah.
So what are you going to replace them with? Well, we have a bunch of Autocannon 5s.
Yeah.
Throw them on.
And what that means, too, right, is that, you know, the AC5 is not going to do 10 damage, but it's going to be a viable competitor for weight and tonnage, and it's going to kind of fit in between the large laser and the PPC. And the Autocannon 2, with buff damage, has a place next to an LRM-5. Mm-hmm. Although, granted, the range difference between the two is not that great. You know, the AC-2 goes up to 24 hexes, the LRM-5 goes up to 21, but it's got enough of a benefit and enough of a hitting power that's like, I'm okay. I'm okay with the Blackjack.
You can deal with it now.
Yeah. And, you know, what you were saying about the sort of the different to-hit numbers and the to-hit rolls about how that changes damage, mm-hmm. if you want to go into that.
Yeah, so the idea that I had is more in line with, because I know people, like, BattleTech is like gospel for a lot of the guys who played it from the 80s, which is why the rules have always stayed the same. But there are things that evolved, like how physical attacks are handled, how partial cover's handled. I would handle autocannons in the same way, where the same thing's happening. You're keeping the damage the same on them. But if you roll above the target number, it adds that +2 damage. And you can even explain that in fluff. Like, the reason is you had such a good shot that you're not, you know, let's say you're not dealing with recoil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it's just something with, like, standard ammunition that does that.
Yeah.
Or the way the autocannon works.
Well, and that kind of gets into, you know, the autocannons have been fluffed a lot of different ways. And, I think what, you know, like, for example, a demolisher tank, you know, it's fluffed as firing a single giant massive shell, which is great, but you're also dealing with a world that's had sort of standardization. And actually, I believe on NPR, there's a really cool podcast about the standardization of screws, thanks to American colonialism. a whole other topic for another day. But when you've got, when you have the Starlink Defense Force and you have, you know, mech parts that are swappable and ammunition that's swappable, and you're dealing with a supply chain across hundreds of light years, no asshole developer is going to say, I'm going to make an Alcan 20, but it's going to fire different ammunition. Like, every military in the world is going to say, I don't want to buy your proprietary ammo.
Yeah.
Either send me the demolisher, and I'll put my own autocannons on, or get your shit together.
Maybe Ameris did that because he knew it was coming.
Yeah, the full Ameris. So,
Cameron's had a bad idea.
Autocannons generally have been fluffed in general as having firing a stream of projectiles. And it's been like that in video games, and it's been like that in the fiction. And so I think the idea of conceptualizing this as a stream of bullets is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And that's where this rule kind of comes in.
Yeah, the damage bonus kind of runs off of that. So if we weren't clear enough with it, so like if you roll above the target number, so if you roll, let's say you have a 7 to hit, and you're firing your autocannon 5. So if you roll a 7, you hit, but you're only going to do 5 damage, which is the rating of the weapon. So that means you don't have to change stats. If you go over that, you add 2 to that. So like if you roll an 8, you would do 7 points of damage. So it's an elegant way to change things, it, like, with one sentence in the rule book, without actually having to change record sheets.
Yeah. And if, I saw this also on the boards, I don't know if this was your idea or somebody else's, which I thought was interesting, although kind of, it's like an asterisk by that. It's like, what does that then become? Is, you know, if you roll, you know, maybe like one less than the targeted number, maybe do half damage or something round down. Because again, it's that stream of bullets. So does that mean like a Jaeger mech or rifleman has that threat against light mechs, has that threat against, you know, airborne targets?
It would be a way to make them more, a little more accurate than the other weapons. Yeah. But again, it's another thing that, like when you just do the target number thing, like I brought up, you don't really have to think about it. You just know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, add +2 damage to it.
Yeah.
With that, it's like, okay, well, now I got to keep track of this and divide it by 2. And
right. So like one sentence then becomes a paragraph in the rule
book. It's not like it's that much more complicated, but it's something that would
I think
turn
what's interesting is you look back at the original rule books, they're really quite thin. They're very manageable. You don't look at that and suddenly get overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's like a magazine.
But then you get the newer rule books, and really the rules are the same. They're just, there's explanations on top of explanations, and it can look really scary. And I think Battletech's definitely a game where it's good if someone kind of walks you through it. but it definitely, like, you know, if you can do it within a sentence versus doing it in a paragraph, I think that's definitely more attractive. But, you know, for me, I mean, one of the big things is, you know, I like fighting games. I play fighting games. And, you know, having, you know, recently gone through this, you know, the past couple of years with Killer Instinct, which, by the way, is the best fighting game of the last generation. Don't care who you are, what you say, what you think. You're wrong if you think otherwise.
I like King of Fighters.
Get the fuck out. best
well,
music.
Podcast is over.
Yeah, podcast is over. Best music, best characters, best mechanics. It's amazing. But one of the really cool things about Killer Instinct is that when Iron Galaxy took over development with Season 2, when they would do updates, they would give you reasons why. And the community definitely did not appreciate that the way they should have, because Capcom, they're like new Street Fighter, they just do stuff, they don't care, it's whatever, and that's why nobody likes Street Fighter 5. But with Killer Instinct, they gave you reasons, so even if you disagree with it, at least you understood what they were doing. And I think what's interesting about fighting games is that when they're done well, when they're made well, like we all probably played Street Fighter 2, but we all know with the Dragon Uppercut or Dragon Punch in Street Fighter 2, you could do it repeatedly with no recovery, and it was an invincible one-frame wake-up. No. But with Killer Instinct, what they did is, and a lot of and more recent versions of Street Fighter or other games, is that, you know, an uppercut like that is a one-frame reversal. It's invincible on frame one. You can do it from being knocked down. And it hurts when you get hit by it, because it's, especially because you're probably going to do it on wake-up. Someone's trying to apply pressure, and you're going to counter-hit them. And now you just took away, like, 18% of their life bar in one move. It hurts. But it has 30 seconds of recovery. And so if you whiff and you land, you're open to get punished, and you get punished hard if the player, if your opponent knows what they're doing. And, you know, the same move, same time, like, light moves, these light, quick punches and kicks do little damage, have short range, have low recovery, and they're also really fast. So you're kind of playing off these pros and cons. And what that means is that, yes, there can be right answers and wrong answers, but it provides you options. And if you have options, you have to think about how you do it. It provides an interesting game. And one of the things that happened in these fighting games, too, is you'll get these updates that'll say, oh, well, you know what? We found that this move was changing the meta in a way that we didn't like. And so rather than being, like, a plus one on block, so you get one frame of advantage on block, and it's still, therefore still your turn, we're going to make it negative one. So maybe you don't necessarily lose your turn, but it can be reversal. You can get, or your opponent can get our pressure. Or maybe this move causes more pushback on block. And so, you know, maybe you're safe, and as in you can't be punished after this move hits on block, but it's no longer your turn. And I think moves that provide options and decision making makes a game more interesting. And so with BattleTech, I think, you know, an autocannon doesn't have to be as good as a PPC or a laser, but it has to be viable, and there has to be an interesting reason to use it.
The autocannons, you don't want them to be Ken. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want them to be what, Johnny Cage.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to just be doing, you know, nut punches and shadow kicks, you know, over and over again. It has to have a place. And I think unless you're playing simply for the sake of having the feel and flavor of the universe, especially as you get later on in the eras, I feel like the autocannons need a boost. And again, it's not that the autocannon 5 suddenly is better than the large laser or the PPC, but it kind of fits in between them. It doesn't do as much damage as the large laser, but it has greater range. It doesn't do as much damage as the PPC or the large laser, but it has less heat.
But it has no heat, well, next to no heat, and it's consistent.
And it's consistent. And you know, granted, it has ammunition. But one of the things that I think is worth pointing out, that unless you're playing a really long game, you know, chances are you're never going to chew through a full ton of AC-5 ammo.
Definitely not AC2.
So go nuts. You know, you don't have to worry about running hot if you're firing your AC5. Whereas with the PPC, yeah, maybe you don't take that shot because you just jumped that turn and it's a high target number or to hit number. So avoid shooting it. But with the AC5, it's like, okay, it's an 11, whatever. It's 1 point of heat.
But even with the 5 points of damage too, which is getting it back on how bad damage kind of is for them. Yeah, it's consistent with 5 points, but it's still just not enough.
Well, right. Well, and there are a couple of things to add on to that, too. And I think part of it is an AC5 can perform really well if you have enough map sheets to play on. You know, if you're fast enough and you can keep an opponent at range, it's viable. But, you know, the games tend to kind of gravitate towards being knife fights, unless you're really advanced players.
Well, a lot of our ideas, I mean, what we were playing, what, like 2x2?
Yeah.
Most of the time. And
yeah.
I mean, what's the largest we've gotten in our group? Wasn't it like 3x3 or something
No, we did a 3x2, so we've done on six map sheets.
Yeah. So even in playtesting, we've tried on larger maps too.
And definitely, like if you're the more advanced players, the more you're going to be using those map sheets, the more you're going to be trying to move around. And we did, like, we played a game just recently, and you know, we moved quite a bit around those map sheets in a way that, you know, I think a lot of, well, when we were growing up, we didn't play like that. I mean, the other issue is I know people are concerned about the names, and it's a bit on the OCD side, but yeah, I get it too. It's viable. You don't want to change everything up. And I, you know, my answer to that is, and it might be by happenstance or it might be totally real, is that the autocannons, by their names, tend to actually fire that amount of ammunition. And what I mean is, with an AC-20, you've got 5 shots per ton. You are literally firing 20% of a ton of ammunition every time you fire an AC-20. 10% with a 10, 5% with a... Or sorry, yeah, 5%
with
5.
With
and then,
AC5.
Well, the AC-2 is a bit of an odd man out because you got 45 shots per ton. But don't worry about it. It's not worth getting hung up on that one.
Yeah, they haven't worried about it since, what, the 80s. We're not going to worry about it now.
Right. And so I think it's one of those things that you could... You could easily just fluff it as, okay, they do more damage, but they're firing basically based on their names are based on how much of a tonnage of ammunition they're firing. So yeah. don't get hung up on it.
Recoil mechanic.
Yeah. So it's worth doing. I mean, here's the other thing too is, BattleTech is clearly in an era of transition in terms of wanting to update itself, and that's a whole other topic for another time, based on aesthetics. But if we're willing to sit down and update a lot of the visual aesthetic of the battle mechs because we're concerned about them being aged, I think we can update autocannons and not worry too much about it and not lose our shit over having some damage stats changed. And actually, like the rotary autocannons, the 5 in particular had...
Yeah, if we look beyond 3025,
The rotary autocannon, very quickly after its first publishing in the Federated Suns field manual, actually had a stats change. They felt it was too light of a weapon, I think.
Or maybe
they didn't have enough criticals. They wanted to update the criticals.
They did the same thing with Tactical Handbook.
Yeah, they changed
every
all those.
Every single weapon was basically changed.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things where it can happen. The game will survive if it happens. I think the game will be better. It will be stronger. And it just requires the writers and the powers that be to just sit down and say, you know what? We've been seeing this for a long time. Let's just go ahead and do it. Because, an autocannon 10 suddenly being a head capper may change things. But that makes it interesting because then the only two head cappers in 3025 era are autocannons. And I think that's cool. That's cool. And it means mechs like the Enforcer. It means Shadowhawks. It means Wolverines.
Banshee
can do... Can,
Urban mech.
Can force PSRs or piloting skill rolls. Which, especially if you're playing with regular skilled mech warriors, those PSRs can be really scary. If it's a 6 or better to stay up, there's a good chance you may fall.
Up.
So it's just that's our spiel on that. I think it's worth pursuing. I just want to see how long we have been chatting before we subject you to another topic. Well, we've been going on for about 37 minutes. Do you want to call it here, or do you want to?
What else do you think we could talk about? I guess we can think about how to make the mechanic up with would look outside of 3025.
Well, right. Well, and I think because
that was another. We know what we're talking about.
Well, right. Well, and it's I think one of the things to think about too, especially with LBX autocannons. LBX autocannons are incredibly powerful, and I think for a long time, especially when we were growing up, I said, "Well, why would we want to do like this like sandblasting? One point of damage here, one point of damage there," and then very quickly realize what like floating criticals or exposed sections of armor, like wow, suddenly like getting hit with an LBX autocannon is terrifying.
Yeah. So what? How are we thinking of this? If we were doing a damage increase, we were coming up with it, or when we did it, we were only thinking about applying it to standard ammunition. But for something like, let's say you're firing an LB-10X instead of if you're using cluster ammunition.
Or if you're using flak ammo.
Or flak ammo, whatever. You're not applying that bonus to the damage of the weapon. You're applying it to the cluster chart for the weapon. So the clusters become way more accurate with the plus 2 to hit.
It was either that or just saying, okay, straight die roll, LB-10X, you just roll in 10 cluster chart, you don't worry about it, or you can add the plus 2. I mean, there are definitely different ways to handle this and definitely different options, because we don't want cluster ammo to become more powerful than it can be, because believe me, there's nothing more satisfying than taking your bushwhacker version with the LB-20X...
Yeah, and rolling every cluster on that thing.
And then like... Round one or two, like taking your friend's assault mech, and this wasn't you, this was somebody else.
No.
And then like floating crit and knocking out the gyro, like round two, like it's awesome. I recommend it. Try it. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't even need to be more powerful than it is. But I think definitely. The increased slug damage is definitely worth
pursuing.
It's
the little nudged in the ammo carrying weapons ability, you know, in the era of case and double heat sinks.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, once you hit double heat sinks, you know, it's a problem. And I think I look at, like, the Bushwhacker, and, you know, it has that standard AC-10. And I think maybe in the designer's heads, they were fluffing it, that it was being designed, you know, just before the Klan invasion. And so probably the AC-10 was a byproduct until LB-10Xs were rolling out. I get the impression in the fluff, especially when you're reading the Blood of Kerensky trilogy, that the Inner Sphere had basically the old mechs, and then, like, the clans hit, and then, like, right afterward, that suddenly, all this advanced ammunition and all these advanced technologies just suddenly showed up. And just before, you were stuck using your, you know, 3025 Crusader, your Marauder, or whatever. And so that's a bit of a transition that they've been smoothing out in the past 10, 15 years, like the War of 3039, you got these prototype versions. You know, they talk about it in Interstellar Operations and Strat Ops and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, like, dates of extinction and dates of reintroduction and the tech manual. But, you know, before that, it seemed like it was very sudden. And so maybe that's what they did it as. Or maybe they thought, well, we'll just put an AC-10 because it'll make it interesting. But there's not much of a reason to put an LB-10X as soon as you can on that thing. But
yeah,
in general, once you get to the 3050 era and beyond, like, if you're not using an LB-10X, what else are you doing?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And it also makes the Ultra Autocannon 5, especially the Inner Sphere Ultra Autocannon 5, more interesting.
Yeah,
it means that Sentinel is a totally different beast in the game. And I know 2 points of damage on top of a 5-point damage sounds silly. It's just not enough. But I think it is, especially when you're taking into account range. And it means that with an Autocannon 5, you're shooting at medium range when a medium laser is at long.
Yeah.
Or with an Ultra Autocannon, you're shooting at medium range when a medium laser can't even hit you.
And oh my god, you can match the damage of the Clan ER medium laser.
Which is... That's a long
time. That's another topic. That is... We're not going to get into that one.
Oh, man. We would be here for an hour.
I'm a Clan fan, but...
It's obscene.
I can already see your forehead turning red.
Yeah. It's... It's such bullshit.
LRM minimum ranges.
What were they thinking? An ER medium laser goes up to 15 hexes, 1 ton, 7 points of damage, 5 points of heat.
It had to be a typo.
Fuck you, Jordan Wiseman.
Anyway, autocannons.
Autocannons, yeah. So it's a little boost. It's a help, and you know the cluster thing. And so I guess we will talk about it. So a couple weeks ago, we did something where it was equal BV. Actually, I think the Inner Sphere Lance had a little bit higher BV.
I had a bad week, and we decided to make it worse for me.
Yeah. So I should say it was Battle Value 2. It was based on the stuff and the new record sheets, and it was an Inner Sphere Lance, kind of like air quotes here, Razzle Hog Republic. So it was a
Dragon, Vindicator,
Panther,
and Jenner.
And then I took...
Standard variants, none of the special ones.
And I took a Gargoyle Prime. And granted, it was... Gargoyle Prime was like an elite pilot. It was like a skill...
0-1
like,
or something?
No, it was 1-2, I think. It was piloting 2, gunnery 1. And it was Gargoyle Prime. And the Inner Sphere was all standard pilots, mm-hmm. you know, 5-4. And we played with the optional rules in Tech Ops, where you can aim high, aim low, aim to the left, aim to the right. So for a +3, you could aim in a way that you could aim at the legs, you can aim at the punch location, with shots from above and shots from below, which is actually in the rules in Total Warfare. Or you could aim to the left side of the mech or aim to the right side of the mech. And so, granted, yes, using Elite Pilot, but... What I basically did is with the Gargoyle is when I felt it was viable to do so, I aimed high and used the cluster charts. And I didn't get as many head hits as I wanted to, but I got enough.
It caused enough stress.
And so basically within, I don't know, 8-10 rounds?
No, I think we got up to like 10.
10?
It got pretty high.
I was able to basically knock unconscious all 4 Inner Sphere pilots to the point where they got like 4 or 5 head hits and none of them were able to kind of come conscious again in the next end phase. And basically won through just knocking a lance of mechs unconscious.
Yeah, it came down to the dragon. He almost took off the left torso of the gargoyle.
And the gargoyle got pretty beat up. I mean, there was some, you know, if there was one or two rolls that went Dan's way, that gargoyle would have lost a torso.
Would I lose, like, 7 rounds of initiative in that game?
Which definitely hurt.
Yeah.
But the gargoyle was fast enough that it probably would have changed, you know, movement positions. But it definitely means that a Gargoyle Prime is a viable machine. And it's a good way to sync BV, right? If you need to have a fifth mech, you could probably nudge the piloting skills up a little bit because it's got a low BV versus a Timberwolf or a Direwolf or a Warhawk.
Yeah, it also shows, and if you look at how the rules have actually progressed, how useful that mech probably was when you were dealing with units using a lot of partial cover. Because you used to have, back in the old days, roll 1d6 on partial cover.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could score head hits pretty easily.
Yeah, it was hard to hit. It was a +2 or +3.
It was a 3. It was a 3. I remember that.
Which was pretty high. Which means getting to water wasn't as scary, because you could just sit there and camp with your +3 and you wouldn't be so worried about it. But yeah, it would be punch location. And now it's a +1, and you roll 2d6 on the normal location chart, and you just...
Any leg hit is just brushed off.
Yeah. It like hits the terrain. But yeah, no, it's cluster hits are interesting. People kind of groan when it comes down to it, but they're powerful. They work, especially when you've got a mech that's got a bunch of, you know, armor locations that are stripped of armor. You know, every hit, every group of five, every single SRM, every cluster point from an LBX is a critical hit roll. And when you're rolling, you know, 2-3 critical hits for a single location, it's powerful.
Those dice rolls are going to creep up.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to creep up into your favor eventually.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's basically it. I mean, to kind of sum up, I mean, we love Battletech. We've been doing it for a long time. I think it's worthwhile for the creators to visit the idea of looking at autocannons and buffing them. I don't think it's something that needs to be drastic. If the guys over at the Battletech PC game thought it needs to be done to make those weapons more viable. Now, granted, also in the PC game, they're way higher. Yeah, they're way higher.
What we're talking about.
But they got stability modifiers too, and a number of different aspects. But it's worth looking at. I think you can do it without unbalancing the game. You can do it without, you know, making energy weapons like inferior. They can still be superior. But I think the autocannons have they got a place on the battlefield, and
you can do it without changing, you know, stats on the weapons too. Yeah, so that's less work for the developers when you have to go update those sheets.
Yeah, all you need is an errata and just put an asterisk by it or something like that, and just say, hey, this is something we're gonna do. And it's not unheard of.
TacOps optional rule.
Yeah, it's just something that can just be done, just boom. And I think it'll make the game healthier, and it means that your tanks, your scorpions, your vedettes, your scimitars, and your saladins, like
they become better.
So it's worth doing.
So of the two rules that we actually did discuss, which one do you think you like a lot better, like after we talked about it, like has your opinion changed at all?
I think I'd be happy with either. I think the straight damage boost is probably the easiest, but I would be happy with doing it on a, you know, if you roll on a 7 and you need a 7, it's 5. If you roll higher than that, you get the +2. I think it's totally fine.
It makes them feel different than even like LRM launchers, or you know, because your lasers are just your vanilla point shoot hit. Yeah. Your autocannons are point shoot hit, but you get a bonus. Your missile launchers are point shoot, roll cluster hit.
Yeah.
So it actually makes them different.
Right, which actually has been something that people have talked about for a long time, is that, you know, the thing about Battletech is that, you know, in general, you know, the weapons, you know, they just do damage and that's it. And you want a min max, you take the most efficient thing. Which is kind of where, you know, flamers come in. You know, maybe flamers do heat instead of doing damage.
Yeah. Heat and damage.
Or heat and damage, yeah.
Machine guns, +1 bonus on, you know, rolling for critical hits.
Yeah, and that's something that the developers have clearly been trying to address with new weapon systems in the game. You've got your plasma weapons, you've got mm-hmm. your chemical guns, you've got your battle mech tasers,
mortars too.
And
mortars have different ammo. Yeah.
And so they've been trying different ways to make different options. For mechs to make things more interesting. I mean, even rocket launchers in a way.
I love those. those are such a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah. And so I think the idea that you're introducing something that's a bit different. So, if you've got your direct fire weapons, you've got your ACs, and you've got your lasers, make the ACs function differently and make them interesting enough that it's worth taking them.
I like the feel different option a lot more. And it's not me trying to toot my own horn or anything.
Yeah.
It's just it makes them feel different.
Right.
And it doesn't give them more work to do.
Yeah.
When it comes to, changing record sheets and errata.
Because, even, if LRMs and SRMs are both missile weapons and they both function the same, at least, LRMs go longer and they do 5 points per cluster, and SRMs are lighter and they go shorter, but each missile goes to a different location. And they're different enough that they both have their space. Mm-hmm. Unlike clan missiles!
Yeah, we'll get into that another day.
Yeah.
Forget that.
So yeah, guys, I'm going to see what our time is here. So I think we managed to creep up to about 45 minutes. If I can type my password.
We'll get better at doing this.
Yeah.
Adam, you're definitely more of the talker than I am.
Well, I talk for a living. We just made it to 51 minutes and 30 seconds. So I think we are going to call it here, guys. If you listen, thank you. If you have an opinion, I mean, go ahead and share it. I'd be interested to know. I mean, I have no idea where we're going to share this, but maybe we'll just upload it to YouTube and call it a day.
I got a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I go by Fear Factory on the boards, too. I don't know if we mentioned our form handles.
I'm actually, it's Abu. Mm-hmm. And you guys may have seen some of the stuff on the BattleTech painting or the Players by Zip Code.
With me, I did the Burak handbook, which I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
But I'm more proud of my mercenary unit, Litany Against Fear.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you've probably seen us around. And if not, I mean, we're there. And, yeah, I guess we'd be curious to hear what you guys think, if you agree with us. Or if you guys,